Welcome to Larry Reedy's America. This is episode G7 for guns. And last week we had Walt Enneking on as a guest, and we kind of ran out of time. So Walt is back again this week. And without further ado, we'll introduce Walt. We're going to talk about some of the different guns that he's owned or he has now, and what he thinks about them. And obviously, I'll ask some questions and comment on it. But without further ado, Walt, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Larry.
Okay. What are we going to start with today?
Last time we talked about that AR and that Canik pistol, I've got some older guns that are not necessarily tactical.
Yeah.
We were talking about that Uberty, basically a Colt Peacemaker replica.
Yes. Yes.
And I think I picked that up back in 2010 or 11 with the intention of getting into cowboy action shooting.
Where did you wind up getting that? Because I haven't seen them around much.
The Uberty?
Yeah.
I ordered it. So back when we just had the one little gun shop in town, yeah. You know, that's what I ended up doing with a lot of my guns is like, I didn't like anything that was on the shelf. I would always like go deep into the weeds and find something unique or something that I liked. And that Uberty really caught my eye. It had that charcoal bluing on the cylinder and it was like the bluing on the barrel was like really deep and, like almost neon, you know. It wasn't like your standard shotgun barrel blue.
Yeah.
The thing just popped. It was just a really pretty gun. So I actually ordered that from Uberty and they got it in for me. And, I think it was $600. I think.
Well, that's not in the Ruger territory. I'll tell you, because Ruger, that Vaquero, I think I paid about $800.
I believe
that.
It. Yeah. And I looked at the Vaqueros and, I was like, yeah, I think the Uberty is just more, because is the Vaquero technically still a Colt Peacemaker frame, or is that, it's kind of their own thing, isn't
it? It's their own thing.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So the Uberty spoke to me because I was like, well, this is essentially a Colt Peacemaker.
Yes.
You know, it's the same dimensions anyway, the same specs, so to speak, with the exception it wasn't a 45 long Colt.
How about the accuracy?
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the exception of the, you know, those sights, it's got that old blade sight that's pretty long on the front. You have to get used to it. But for a budget replica of a historical weapon, the trigger was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's a single action revolver, you know, it's
with, an old cowboy with fixed rear sights.
Exactly. Yeah. And really it was just like a little notch in the frame and you had to get that blade down in there. But once you figured out what that gun liked, I don't think I ever really grouped it too heavy on paper. I was, I don't know, maybe 2 to 3 inches at 25 yards from the standing. I'm pretty happy with that.
Oh, absolutely.
But I never actually put it in the vise and found out what it could actually do. Although I still own it. I should probably do that now that we're talking about it.
Well, you know, when I've given several women's shooting classes out here. And I always tell them, I put a silhouette target up. I said, you're not here to shoot bullseyes. I show them where the kill zone is. Yeah. And I said, we're going to do 25 and then 30 feet. Because if you shoot at somebody from 20 yards, you're going to jail.
You better have good cause.
Yeah,
typically, you know, unless you're being shot at by somebody, they can't really threaten you from that distance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but anyway, and it works pretty well because if they hit them in the neck and they're aiming for the belly, they still know they got them.
Yeah.
And that's a primary reason, you know, self-defense.
Yeah. So. When it comes to handguns, that's pretty much what I've always focused on is like, I just want to put one in the vitals.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to do that relatively quickly and under stress.
Yeah.
Because that's every self-defense shooting is going to have those variables in play.
Yeah. Well, see, and you have combat experience where I never hit. I don't know how I would react, but I got a pretty good idea that because at my age, I don't really care.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. You're not, your ego's not coming into play at all. No. Yeah. I've known a lot of shooters over the years that like really expected to rise to the occasion, in lieu of actually training or being put to the test. And I'm here to tell you, man, I thought about this on the drive over. I was like, man, what questions are you going to ask me today? Yeah. And, I was terrified the first time that I thought I was going to have to pull the trigger. I ended up not having to do it. Mm-hmm. But when you approach that ledge of knowing that this decision is getting close to having to be made, you start to have a lot of big internal conversations about whether or not you're able to, how are you going to feel after, like, and really that all happens pretty fast. But it's a...
Well, you know, my philosophy has always been, I'll eat Bambi, but I won't kill him. But somebody breaks into my house, they're going to leave in a body bag. And I would have no qualms about shooting him. I would have no regrets. Because if somebody enters your home, I think you got a 70% chance they're going to kill you.
Yeah, if they... There's always a lot of what ifs that come into play. From a firearms instructor's background, I always got asked a lot, like, well, if this happens, what do I do? I was like, well, you could what if this to death. But generally speaking, I think you're right. If somebody breaks into your home, they don't have your best intentions at heart.
No, and they don't want to be identified.
Right.
So
yeah, So no, I hear you. The story I get a lot, especially from women, I taught women's classes too for a while, is they have no problem defending their children. They would kill for their children in an instant.
Yeah.
Maybe even if it wasn't justified. You know, they're quick to protect their kids, rightfully so. But the story changes a little bit when they're just defending themselves. You know, then hesitation comes into play. So I've always found that, like, when you really understand, like, when you act in a self-defense scenario, like, you might not just be protecting yourself. You have somebody out there that wants to hurt or kill someone. I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to defend, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean.
I'm trying to defend that mindset that it's okay to have. It's okay to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. And you know, the when you, a friend of mine, he was a guest. He's an author. He's retired, and he started writing books. I think he's published 9 of them. He was telling me about a funny incident he had one time, and he picked up a hitchhiker, and he was in his 50s or something, and they were talking and was going along, and the hitchhiker said, how do you know I'm not a serial killer? He said, well, I don't think there'd be 2 of us in the same car.
That'll change the mood of the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. He said the guy was dead silent for a few minutes.
He should have, at that point, just reached over and locked the doors just to send the message home.
Okay. What other... Well, you like the bolt action rifles, don't you?
Yeah, so we used to do a lot of prairie dog hunting. I grew up groundhog hunting with my dad over in Ohio, okay. And he always had basically one rifle for the longest time. I think it was a Weatherby 22-250, and I just always had a soft spot in my heart for a really good bolt action weapon. But I didn't like hunting rifles because there was a really lightweight barrel. And I noticed that, like, if you're doing a lot of shooting, once you heat that barrel up, accuracy can degrade. Mm-hmm. So then I got on the police rifles, which are or a varmint barrel, you know, just anything with a heavy barrel.
Mm-hmm.
I got turned on to Savage because they were affordable and the quality, just like the Canic I was talking about earlier, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a really nice rifle. Savage built a great rifle, and they have for a long time. I really like that AccuTrigger. So I had the Model 10, which is kind of their police / varmint rifle, kind of had a tactical profile to it. Very smooth action, great trigger from the factory.
Cartridge?
That was in a 223.
223.
Yeah. And then I got the Model 10 with another couple letters behind it. I can't remember what they were, but it was a 308, also a police rifle. And that one had the fluted barrel, I think it even had a flash hider on it that you could put a sound suppressor on if you wanted to. It was more of a tactical, but too heavy for a realistic situation. I think it weighed like 12 pounds, you know? So I was like, you're not going to take it hunting because you don't want to pack it around.
Yeah.
Unless you're like sitting up in a bell tower or like in a, like a police standoff scenario to where they're just providing overwatch to a scene. The rifle wasn't really meant to be carried around. It also had like a 28 inch barrel.
Yeah.
Pretty long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I really enjoyed shooting them. I enjoyed the accuracy out of them. And I enjoyed finding out, you know, what is involved in throwing a round down to 1,000 yards. What ballistics come into play? What math do you have to do? You know, you start building a dope card for your rifle and figuring out, you know, and then you start getting into reloading your own rounds. And that's a whole other rabbit hole to go.
Yeah.
So I did that for a while too. And eventually it just became too expensive.
Yeah.
308, you know, it's not cheap to shoot.
No.
But I still have that 223. It's broke down in pieces right now because I spray painted it a number of times over the years. So I'm going to refinish it, get it back operational, and maybe take it out to Nebraska and dump some prairie dogs again one of these days.
Well, you know, I've got a lot of 223s, 5.56s, and 308s. And I've shot the 6.5.
I hear a lot about the 6.5.
But the problem is I've got a 200-yard range.
Yeah.
That 308 is just as flat at 200 or 300 yards as a 6.5 is. But the 6.5, you got longer distance.
Yeah. Well, on a range the length of yours, you're not getting the benefits of a 6.5. You can do fine with the 308. I know a handful of guys that compete in the precision rifle series, and they've got a, I think they do one down at Friendship. I think they do one over at the Switzerland County Sportsman Club, maybe. There's a couple of competitions around, and a lot of them swear by the 6.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of good things about it. I just don't know that much about its ballistic advantages over the 308.
Well, the disadvantage is the price of the cartridge.
That's, I've heard that. What are they around?
The last time I looked, they were over a buck.
Well, that's what 308s were. And two for a good match grade, like 75 grain boat tail, like a really good one.
Yeah.
Like $2.
But I mean, I'm a plinker.
I know.
200 yards.
I know. Yeah.
And when, you know, when the 308s were 60 cents a round and the 223s were 30 cents or less.
Right.
The 6.5 was a buck something.
Yeah, that starts getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not, I mean, it's okay to throw maybe 10 rounds down in a day, but if you want to shoot for a few hours and like really get some work done,
yeah,
it's going to cost you.
Well, it seemed with me, I sit on that deck. I'm too old to prone, too old to sit on the ground,
sure.
Too old to stand.
Right.
So I sit on my little bench and shoot. And when I shoot rifles, I usually blow through a couple hundred rounds.
It's not hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do the same thing. And honestly, I have just as much fun with a 22.
Oh,
I got a Ruger 10/22 that I built up. I've got an old 550 Remington Speedmaster. My dad's got that same rifle in the pump version. They're accurate. They're fun. You shoot all day long and you can stretch them out. We've killed prairie dogs at 200 yards with a 22.
Yeah. Well, I've always told women, you know, when they shoot a 22, I take them up to a 380, then a 9, and I stop. And if they're uncomfortable with anything, I said, get 22 defensive ammo, because if you're going to miss with everything else, shoot them with a 22 for home protection. And now SIG, I can't remember the nomenclature, but I bought a SIG 22, 20-round capacity.
Wow.
And they've got magazines, 30 rounds you put in there.
Wow.
In a 22 long rifle.
Okay.
So it's, and I tried to get one from Rusty Buck in Versailles. They didn't even have it in their catalog.
Oh, really?
So I picked up Guns Bud's Gun Shop, and they shipped it to the Rusty Buck.
There you go.
So
isn't it nice having a gun shop around that'll do FFL transfers and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, because Guns and Tackle, when Mike well, his son has it now, and he's using it as a tactical thing and training,
right,
and sell some guns. But Mike started off in a big way, and I don't know what happened, whether it was COVID or mm-hmm. or what, but it just changed.
Yeah.
And when Reed Meyer, he had the gun shop in town. I think Reed's more of a hobbyist than he is
yeah.
a small business guy.
No, I fully agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's neat. And in the Rusty book here, what's really nice, they got that archery range, and high school has an archery team.
Yeah. And I know. And they're in there doing the indoor archery and stuff. And that's
pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's into the fishing, the hunting and everything.
Yeah. So. We went in and we took the boys out fishing on the pond the other day, and they needed some new fishing stuff. So we went and got some lures and some, they had everything we needed.
Yeah.
It's just nice to have.
Well, anytime you want to fish, like I got one loaded over there.
I'm going to take you up on that.
I mean, seriously.
I fish a lot, Larry. I'll skin them up for you.
I got cat, red ear, bluegill, and bass.
Awesome.
And some of the cats are like that. I hit one year where, trying to think who it was, heck, I can't remember. One of the guys in the book came out and yeah. brought his kid, Eric. They caught, I think the first day, 40.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, and these were, some of these bluegill were, I mean, they're MBS tournament type.
No, okay.
Because they're big.
Yeah. Well, if they don't get fished, I mean, usually if you want to talk fishing, we can talk fishing.
we'll go back. Well, we only got a few minutes. We can talk.
All right.
We
all
can
right.
talk fishing.
Okay. Because I can. We can have a whole other podcast just about fishing if you want to.
Well, you know, the kids, Larry, Matt, or his grandkids, they'll go fishing and they throw them back in.
Oh, yeah.
And I need, with the size of the pond I've got, and I usually stock it with minnows and
yeah.
You know, every year or so.
They need to be harvested every so often.
Well, they say my pond, if you took out maybe 500 a year, and I haven't had 500 taken out in 5 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's big. Some of the catfish are really big.
I don't fish for catfish much just because I don't like to eat them.
No, I don't. Nance loves them.
I've had them. They can be good.
Yeah.
I mean, I do a lot of fly fishing, and catfish are probably one of the hardest species to catch on the fly just because, you know, usually you're just putting a liver down there, like just kind of bait cast them for them.
Yeah.
But, man, you can't beat anything panfish related, whether it's red ear or green sunfish or bluegill, obviously. Crappie's awesome.
Well, the only thing is crappie's going to kill your pond.
They'll take over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll take it over.
Yeah.
And that's, if you got a pond with nothing but crappies, it's great.
Yeah.
But, it's good eating. I love it. I like the Alaskan, like the sockeye salmon and cod, Alaskan cod, anything caught in Alaska that I really like that.
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Yeah,
Alaska's on my list for sure.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you buy some of these farm fish, and if they're imported from Korea, it's disgusting what they eat.
Oh, you mean like as far as like store bought fish, like farm fish? Yeah, they're not good. Even like most Atlantic salmon that you get from the store, like Kroger's, for example. They put like pink dye and stuff in it.
Yeah, I don't. The only thing we'll buy is if it's caught in Alaska and frozen.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't buy anything else.
There's a seafood market in Seattle that I recommend you check out. I cannot remember off the top of my head what it's called. We went out there on our honeymoon, and they will package up anything you want out there. You get sockeye salmon, and they'll dry ice ship it to your door.
Really?
Fresh off the boat. It's amazing.
Wow.
Probably not super cheap, but it's awesome.
Well, you know, it was neat. One time we went to Ertl's, I think it was, I think we were celebrating our anniversary and we had the kids, and I can't remember the chef's name, but he promised his wife after 7 years they'd go back to Florida.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, how about, can you get some grouper, fresh grouper? How many you need? I said, well, this was when we didn't have as many married grandkids and stuff, but I said, I think there'll probably be 30. And I said, but that not all. I said, maybe 6 or 8 meals for a grouper. I said, wait a minute. Cole's guy in Florida. He says, and I forget how many pounds of grouper to the order. And he said, because he already had some coming out. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like fresh grouper.
I don't think I've ever had grouper.
Oh, the grouper. And
what would you compare it to?
It's better than a really good cod.
Really?
Yeah, and the red fish.
Are we talking like Goliath groupers or that a different species? Not sure.
No, I don't know.
Yeah,
grouper and the red fish, which is a big item in in New Orleans, especially redfish and grouper.
Yeah,
you can flip a coin.
I've heard they're phenomenal.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. Anyway, well, we're over 20 minutes.
All right.
more talking than gun talk.
Sorry, dude. Well,
anyway, we'll close it out now. And again, Walt, thanks for coming back. But we got a couple more guns in, and we'll do this again.
Sure.
I got to get back to reading some of my reviews in the book, and I got a couple of good ones coming up. I've already gone through all the revolvers, and I'm into the semi-automatic pistols now. But
Anyway,
thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And here we're going into National Anthem. I want to thank everybody for listening. God bless you. God bless you, America. And I will talk to you on the next podcast.